Hello and welcome to a week three edition of the quote-unquote expert, quote-unquote roundtable. My name is Adam Levitan. I, of course, the father of Jerry, the most beautiful beast in the world. As always, I'm joined by the man who single-handedly saved Tibet. It's everybody's favorite hippie, the sharpest hippie in DFS, the proprietor, the man who's gone full capitalism, the proprietor of OneWeekSeason.com. JM to win. JM, what's going on?
What is up, guys? We are on YouTube this week, every other week. We got this podcast still out there for all the people. So hopefully subscribers don't crucify us. We got to do this every other week. Give some free stuff away. Good to be hanging out with everyone this week. Had a good week last week. This slate's a little bit different from last week, where things were pretty clear for us on Friday night by the time we recorded the second and a half version of the week two square table. So, it's going to be an interesting slate to talk through. A lot of injuries, a lot of news that we already have. So, should be fun. Before we get started, a couple ways to win free 1 week season for life. I know Adam's going to crap his pants over this. We got on the homepage, there's a link to a DraftKings contest, free contest. Check that out. Also, anybody who signs up today for a week or annual subscription will get a link at the end of the day for another contest to win free 1 week season for life. So take that for capitalism. Adam, how do you feel about that?
What is this for life stuff? Why are you giving stuff away for life? Like, where did we get the timeline that we're going to start giving stuff away for life? You know what I mean? It sounds like you gave somebody a subscription at $29 for their entire life. Is that true?
Yeah. So the new sign up today, I actually intended it to be just free for this year. And then I put the wrong words in on Twitter. So, you know, people just get in for life.
You're gonna be writing this column, this 50,000 word column for the rest of your life. You're gonna be like 80 and be like, well, we said it was for life.
You know me, man. I'm a man of the people.
All right. Well, we need to get into this slate because as JM mentioned, there are a lot of injuries that happened today, Friday, but most of this stuff is known. And yet there's a couple of questionable guys that I think may or may not really impact what I'll be doing much, and most likely they won't. So I think we're pretty much set in terms of injuries. I thought when this slate first started on like Tuesday and Wednesday, I was like, man, there is not a lot of guys that are going to be more than 20% owned on this slate. It looked like it was going to be really flat. And then all of a sudden we get the Dalvin Cook news, we get the Jay Ajayi news, we get the Jack Doyle news, and now the slate is just chalked up in a big way. We are going to get to all of that. Overview on the slate though, Jam, before we get to quarterback.
Yeah, so I kind of thought that this would be a week where either just like don't overthink it and go with all these high-priced games or go with some of these high-priced players. What's weird is a lot of these high-scoring games, they have usage that's spread around, and these guys are pretty much priced appropriately. Guys like Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, obviously on the show we talk mainly DraftKings pricing. So Kamara, Michael Thomas, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce – like Kamara and Thomas are priced appropriately. Kelce and Tyreek are low volume guys on teams that spread the ball around. So there are some interesting question marks there on like who's really worth paying up for. And are we actually getting opportunities for just like smash spots? We're getting opportunities for games that you absolutely have to have. And then it's weird in like the mid range. There's a bunch of guys who can get you 15 to 20 points, but not a bunch of guys who can get you like the 25 to 30 points that we'd really love to have for these spiked weeks. Did we lose Adam? All right, cool. I'm going to jump into quarterback then, and we will go back over to Adam whenever he's back on. So this slate is interesting for a couple reasons. One, there's a guy in Patrick Mahomes who's obviously going to be the chalk. The flip side of that is at 7K, do we really want to pay that price tag? Do we want to go up that high for one single quarterback? So I think that the interesting question here this week is, does Mahomes have the opportunity to put up a score that nobody else is going to put up? At first glance, obviously the answer is yes, after he's put up 10 touchdowns for the first 2 weeks of the season. I'm a little bit curious. I mean, this is obviously an unsustainable pace. So I'm a little bit curious to see, like, what I think he's capped out at 326 yards so far, something like that. So if this is a guy who ends up posting 250 yards and three touchdowns, which is totally in his range, 7K doesn't end up becoming like a must pay price tag. So another guy that, you know, is below that, that I think is really interesting, John Watson, who can potentially put up the same score for 900 less. Adam, catch you up. I just talked about Mahomes and basically saying, is he a dude that we have to have at 7K? Or if he gets you 250, 275 yards and three touchdowns, can we target that same score from some of these other guys? So starting out, what do you think about Mahomes as far as, is he in this like must play category at 7K? Or are you trying to get some of the savings by going down from there?
First of all, it's crazy that there's something wrong with my internet because I use actual Ethernet cords. I'm not using hemp, but you know what I mean? It's so weird that my internet's not working well, but I think I'm good now. I want to get to Mahomes this week. I think it's a unique spot for the Chiefs in the fact that Richard Sherman, who is 6'3", who's coming off of this Achilles tear, just has no prayer whatsoever against the speed guys on the outside. Jaquiski Tartt, the strong safety for the 49ers, is also banged up. Akilah Witherspoon was benched last week. So they have all kinds of problems. And they're also getting Reuben Foster back. And I think that'll help their run defense. So everything points to another huge Mahomes game to me. I think Jimmy Garoppolo will play better than he played last week when I thought he was pretty shaky. So I think he'll play better this week. And Kansas City continues to just get destroyed. I mean, 26th in the league last year in yards per play allowed, 31st this year in yards per play allowed. So, I think Mahomes is awesome. And the thing that DraftKings has done is, like, it's not as spread out as it used to be. You know, if you pay down, quote unquote, from Mahomes to somebody I really like Deshaun Watson, well, you're only saving 900. And whereas that looked like a lot at the beginning of the week, it's not as much now. So I think if I was going to go down from Mahomes, it would be to Deshaun Watson. But I think I want to end up playing Mahomes, particularly if I'm not going to be able to play Kelce or Tyreek Hill. It doesn't feel good to go into Sunday without one of these guys in this game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so what's been weird for me is with the distribution of targets so narrow on the Texans, I really like the idea this week of taking Hopkins and Fuller together on a team. So last week I ended up taking Connor and Juju and AB together without Ben. I had Mahomes instead, but it still correlated pretty well, and it was just because of the savings I needed. It feels weird to do it with, and I've built a couple teams with Mahomes and then Fuller and Nuke. The issue there is, like, Watson can get touchdowns on the ground. So if Fuller and Nuke don't have big games, it's probably because Deshaun Watson ran one or two in. And that's what scares me a little bit about moving off of Deshaun Watson and going up to Mahomes. I think that Mahomes is clearly the best play on this slate. I also think that there are some interesting places to get the savings to make it viable to go up to him. I think roster construction is the one thing that could pull me off of him. And honestly, there's not a lot of other quarterbacks that I really like this week. Like, Drew Brees is a good play, but 6,400, so close to Mahomes. Jimmy G has thrown I think he's thrown more than two touchdown passes zero times in seven games with the 49ers, and he's only thrown two touchdowns three times. Like, we forget how bad his weapons are in general. And then there's guys like Andy Dalton, Matt Ryan. Like, these are all guys in good spots, but again, you got Watson and Mahomes, I think, are clearly superior plays.
Yeah.
You have any take on going away from, like, let's say, take out cash games, take out single entry tourneys, but talking about, like, something like the Wildcat, it's like, what is that, 4,000 entries?
Yeah.
Would you be interested in going to any of these other quarterbacks outside of those two this week?
Yeah. Let me throw one name at you who we haven't talked about yet, in Jared Goff at 5,900. I think this Chargers defense has been decimated, and like, I didn't think it would be this impactful. Like, I knew Joey Bosa was impactful. I didn't think it'd be this impactful where they can't generate any pass rush. And Jared Goff is, his splits, you know, on pressure and not against pressure are just massive. So I think Jared Goff makes sense, particularly when I think Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp are so underpriced, and the target tree is pretty narrow there with no tight ends. And Jared Goff is only 5,900, so you actually do get some savings off of Patrick Mahomes. Cam Newton crossed my mind. We talk about him every week as a guy who can be in play for GPPs, obviously, but I think that it's an interesting spot for Carolina. Bengals coming to this game pretty banged up. No Billy Price, no Joe Mixon. I could see Carolina playing well here, even though I really do like the Bengals in general this year. Did you look at Jared Goff at all?
I didn't look at Goff. I've been looking at Woods and Kupp. We'll get to those guys. The reason I don't look at Goff, the same thing as last week, where I was with you, like, I liked him, but I just can't pull the trigger on him, is touch, like, it's so hard for him to get like a 4-touchdown game, you know, or even a 3-touchdown game, just because Gurley soaks up so many of the touchdowns. Obviously, Gurley can get them through the air. I think that's Goff's primary means of putting up a multi-touchdown game, like a 3-touchdown game. So I hadn't thought about it much. I can't imagine I would go there. I like the play, but I can't imagine I would actually go there. One guy that I could go to in tournaments is Joe Flacco. Mm-hmm. Only 5,400. I'm saying the price because you probably don't have that stored in your mind because it's crazy. But this Denver pass defense is not that good, man. Like, they are substantially below to basically all of these corners outside of Chris Harris are interesting. And Denver's a true pass funnel defense right now. They're awesome against the run, bad against the pass. So at 5,400, I actually think that Flacco is going overlooked. I think he's a guy who – he has a pair of 20-point games. I think that that's in his range again this week.
One guy we didn't talk about, or actually two guys we didn't talk about, are Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to go so under-owned just because he's 100 more than Patrick Mahomes, who is the uber chalk. Obviously, we don't expect Rodgers to come close to Mahomes in yardage, but we can never rule out 4 touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers. And then Matt Ryan in a home game against the Saints, who've been just playing awful pass defense. Actually, a story came out today that they're benching their cornerback. I'm going to go ahead and I think they're benching Ken Crawley and starting PJ Williams or the other way around. Do you have any interest in paying down to Ryan at 5,700 or up to Rodgers at 7,100?
Yeah, I've not thought about Rodgers. Obviously, that's sharp just from a game theory perspective, is something you talk about pretty often, which is just paying up to be contrarian. And grabbing guys in the same price range as a chalky player. Obviously, on paper, he's not as good of a play as Mahomes, but if you take Mahomes at 20% and Rodgers at 3%, Rodgers is going to outscore Mahomes probably more than one out of every seven times. So I like that from a game theory perspective, hashtag game theory bros. And who was the other one that you said? I got distracted
by Matt Ryan.
Yeah, so I've built some teams with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. I'm interested to get into these wide receivers with you when we get there, because I like a lot of these high-priced wide receivers, but I don't love any of them. I don't feel like any of them are locked into these, you know, like last week you felt really good taking Antonio Brown. Didn't pay off, but obviously I protected it with Juju, knowing that if AB had a disappointing game that Juju would be going off. So I could do that last week. 2 weeks ago was Michael Thomas. There's nothing like that this week that feels just locked in. Mm-hmm. A Matt Ryan to Julio Jones, we talk about it. It sucks when Julio goes for 11 points. He has a lower floor than these other high-priced wide receivers, but his ceiling is monstrous. And with Antonio Brown off the slate, I guess we have to throw Michael Thomas in there now because of what he's been doing. But realistically, Julio is the only dude with clear 40-point upside in any given game. I do have concerns about the matchup against Marshawn Lattimore, who's going to trail him and is really the only piece left here. And then I have concerns about Matt Ryan's ability to spread it around for yardage. So I'm a little concerned, but I like Ryan. He's probably fifth, sixth, seventh on my list, mm-hmm. Behind some of the guys we talked about.
All right. Anybody else at quarterback we didn't touch on?
No, I mean, if we're talking like top five teams, top eight teams we're building, I don't think I'll have anyone outside the guys we touched on.
Yeah, let's not waste the people's time with this lottery ticket nonsense. We're sticking to the top tier. Let's move to the running back position. And I want to talk mostly about these injury replacement situations. We have Joe Mixon out. Gio Bernard is 5,900. We have Dalvin Cook out. Latavius Murray is 5,800. We have Jay Ajayi and Darren Sproles out. Corey Clement is 4,300. Wendell Smallwood is 3K. Devontae Freeman is still out. Tevin Coleman is 6,400. There are a lot for this early in the season, a lot of backup running backs projected to get a lot of work. I guess I'll ask you if anyone stands out. We should talk about each one, but does any of those guys I just mentioned stand out as far and away the best play of these backups to you?
What's weird is we talk about these injuries, right? But Tevin Coleman, 6,400. Melvin Gordon, 7,400. Like, if we're talking about, and Christian McCaffrey, 7,800, we're talking about going from Watson up to Mahomes. I mean, that's crazy to play Tevin Coleman over one of those guys. I just think like 70, 80% of the time, Gordon and McCaffrey outscore him. But if you could fit all of them in, then I love that. I don't have interest in Latavius Murray just because of what else is out there. Latavius Murray topped two targets once all last year. And he had 10 games with 15 or more carries. He's not a guy they use in the pass game. He only had two targets in two of those 10 games. So basically we're looking at 1 to 2 targets, 15 carries. I do think his touchdown upside is huge. But with where he's priced and with his low pass game involvement, I'm not interested. FanDuel, he's super cheap.
Yeah.
Obviously passing.
I got to stop you there because people are going to take that as a hot take, because I do think Latavius Murray will be one of the highest owned players on the slate. And I think people are aware of what you mentioned, but they are more inclined to believe, and probably rightfully so, that Buffalo is the worst team in the league and has one of the worst rush defenses in the league. And now they see, and I think 15 carries is low. I think he will see 18 to 20 carries in this game. And I agree with you, he won't see pass down work, but as you mentioned, his touchdown equity is massive. So I think on FanDuel, Latavius is pretty strong. On DraftKings, I agree with you, there are decisions to be made. But I think when you just gloss over it, but when you say you have no interest in Latavius, it's going to be a hot take.
I appreciate that. And that's what I get for thinking for myself, huh? sometimes I look at ownership projections some weeks and I'm just like, what on earth is going on?
Yeah. But that's why it's great. But let's say this before you move on. Latavius is 58 and Gio is 59. And my first instinct was Gio is a way better play just because Gio is so good in the pass game. The problem is from a matchup perspective, Latavius has far, far and away, like this match, if it was any other matchup, I would agree with you that like, there's no way I'm playing Latavius. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that just, so for me, spiked weeks are a huge deal. I'm not looking for like 12 to 20 points if there's somebody else there. So here's what I think. I think Latavius's range is 10 to 20. I think like a realistic bad game for him is still going to be 10 points. So I don't think he's a bad play. It's just with what else is out there, he's not a guy that I want to go to because of how low his pass game involvement is. If he doesn't get the 100-yard bonus, you need him to score two touchdowns to get you 20 points. Obviously, he could. Really great matchup. Who was the Vikings running back a few years ago, the big dude who would get the carries? He'd have like 8 yards and three
touchdowns. Matt Asiata.
Yeah, Matt Asiata. And I remember watching back when it was like you and Pete and Al on this show and yelling when Al was talking about Matt Asiata being a must play. And I was like, are you kidding me? This dude is like, and sure enough, he went and scored like three touchdowns on 32 yards that week. But, you know, if that doesn't happen with Murray, you could easily get 9, 10, 11, 12 points. So to be clear, I don't think he's a bad play. He's just not the best play in this range for me. I'm with you. Like, Gio is, to me, a far superior play. I think that the good run defense on the Panthers, but these stretch runs that the Falcons were able to use last week to get Tevin Coleman outside, the Bengals will be able to do that. I think we're looking at least 5 or 6 catches for Gio. So taking all those things into account, I think that the floor is a little bit higher than it is on Latavius Murray, and I think that the ceiling's a little bit higher because you get him into space. I guess you can make a case for playing them together, but for me it would go Gio, then Tevin Coleman, then Latavius Murray, and I really don't want to play all three of those guys, right, because then you're leaving these spiked weeks on the table with guys like McCaffrey and Gordon that you can try to get up to. So I guess hot take or not, that's kind of where I'm at. Again, I think Latavius is a good play, just in the context of the slate, he's not a guy I'm that interested in.
Okay, let's talk about, before we move on, let's talk about the other injury situation, Corey Clement. I do. Corey Clement's on the injury report with a quad injury. Everybody is virtually certain that he is going to be able to play, but I think people are maybe over-projecting his role. I mean, the Eagles did call up Josh Adams, a big back from the practice squad. They do have Wendell Smallwood, who has been off and on in terms of the coach's favor over the last couple of years. I would say Corey Clement has been the biggest contributor, but I'm not sure that they're going to say, actually, I'm pretty sure they're not going to say, let's saddle up Corey Clement for 20 to 25 touches. Now, the difference between Clement and these other guys is that he's actually priced the way DraftKings used to price backup running backs. He's 4,300. There is a huge difference between 4,300 and 5,900. And that is why I think Clement will be very popular. And Clement also plays pretty well in the pass game. And Clement has a, I think the Colts defense, I may have overestimated how bad they are. I think they can actually be pretty decent with some of the young pieces that they have, but it's still a good matchup, I think, it's particularly with Carson Wentz back. So with all that said, is Corey Clement at 4,300 a must play on this slate with all these running back options?
That was where I had him early in the week. And then today, once Ajayi was officially ruled out, I started, you know, thinking about these things that you're pointing out and realizing, like, couldn't Clement get 12 carries and two catches? Like, that wouldn't surprise us on this offense. Clement has never touched the ball more than 13 times. I think I just posted it, but now I forget what the exact number was. But on this team with this coaching staff, so I do have some concerns. Like you said, they called up Josh Adams. They still have Wendell Smallwood. They like to be unpredictable in the way that they attack a defense. And so if they expect the opponent to just be expecting, you know, gearing up for Clement, it would make sense for them to go with something a little bit different. I have a lot of question marks on this offense just because, you know, now we had Jordan Matthews in the slot. What does this mean for target share all the way around? Does this, you know, lower the passing volume for running backs? We don't love Jordan Matthews, but Carson Wentz is going to throw to him in the slot. He's not even on the slate, so that just takes away points from what we can get on this offense. So, yeah, I am a little more concerned right now about Clement than I was earlier in the week. Not as a bad play, but as in I could see him getting 6, 7, 8 points as opposed to just being a lock for 14 to 20, which, as you mentioned, at his price, then he'd be a great play. That's where the Latavius Murray thing comes in. If this were a few years ago and he were 4,300, 4,400, then he'd be like, or on FanDuel where he cost under 9% of the salary cap, then he would make a lot more sense. It's just hard to pay up, man, for we're getting into like clear workhorse running back range on dudes like Latavius Murray. So that's tough for me. What do you think about Clement? Like, what's a fair touch projection for him in your mind?
Yeah, so I think a realistic scenario is they plug Clement into the Ajayi role, and then they plug Smallwood into kind of a Sproles-ish role and let Clement have a little bit of that too, and then use Josh Adams for some big back stuff. And I'm not sure how much Josh Adams can play. I mean, he's been on the practice squad. I'm really not sure how much they trust him. So I do think there's more meat on the bone for Corey Clement than maybe there would be on a normal week when Sproles is active and Clement is active and Ajayi is active. But I don't think it's a slam dunk at all. And it would be a slam dunk if there weren't so many great running back plays. And we haven't even touched on Alvin Kamara and Todd Gurley yet. And you know, we may have briefly mentioned Christian McCaffrey. So yeah, I don't think it's a slam dunk. And we didn't even mention a guy who I actually think is going to be pretty popular in that same price range as Latavius and Gio, who is for sure a feature back. Spencer Ware is questionable. Kareem Hunt is down to 6K, and it's a massive concern that Patrick Mahomes is not checking down at all. Like, Patrick Mahomes is just like, we're not going to check it down. We're going to go deep, right? And that's killed Kareem Hunt's value on DraftKings because he has 2 targets in 2 games. However, he is handling a huge portion of the running back routes and a huge portion of the running back touches. Where do you slot in Kareem Hunt with the Latavius, Geo, Tevin Coleman range?
I slide in Kareem Hunt as a massive question mark. I wish I knew more. Anybody who tells you that he's going to be heavily used this week is just guessing, right? Like, oh, that dude's having fun on his scooter. Anybody who is like, you know, I saw that was one of the things when I looked at first ownership predictions last night was a lot of attention expected on Hunt. And that surprised me for a guy, as you mentioned, with 2 targets all season. That's not fluky. That's how this offense is being run. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets the Sammy Watkins treatment this week. If they come out and they're like, We're going to feed him the ball. We're going to get him 4, 5, 6 targets. But we're literally just guessing on Kareem Hunt. So I think that I'm putting him as far as like for his floor range, I'm still putting him next to Latavius as a dude with no pass game involvement. Obviously his ceiling, I mean, I've been saying it for 2 weeks. I played him in week 1 over whoever else I played him over. This is one of the most talented backs in the league, probably a top 5, maybe even top 3 running back in the NFL. So I'm totally fine with him if the work is there, but it's a complete question mark on whether the work is there. I wouldn't have Hunt in cash games this week. I just don't think it's worth the risk. And if he goes off for 30 points because he gets a ton of usage, I'll be fine with that just because there's such a high likelihood of him getting another 16 carries and 1 catch. And I don't want that near like high dollar stuff, cash games, especially if other people are chasing that. I'm fine leaving it alone.
One of the reasons I shaved my head and shaved my beard and shaved off all the hair off of my entire body is because I was so sick over not playing Christian McCaffrey last week that I just had to move past it. Like, I passed on Christian McCaffrey, who plays 95% of the snaps, one of the best pass receiving running backs on a full PPR slate in the best possible matchup, one of them for a pass catching running back against the Falcons. I passed on that so I could play play TJ Yeldon. And I was just sick about it to the point where I had to shave all the hair off my body. Now I'm even sicker because Christian McCaffrey's price is starting to get away from us a bit at 7,800. I do think this is low key a good matchup for Christian McCaffrey, as the Bengals have forced a lot of targets, have forced a lot of running back usage in the pass game over the last couple of years. 7,800 for Christian McCaffrey is getting somewhat close to Todd Gurley at 9,200. To Alvin Kamara at 9,500, not close, but somewhat close. What is your take on CMC this week?
I think he's in a less of a good spot this week. I mean, that goes without saying, the Falcons are obviously the best spot for pass catching running backs, but Ian Thomas was drawing coverage from Devondre Campbell. Devin Funchess was on the outside against Trufant and Alford. So I do think that I actually think that Ian Thomas is interesting this week in tournaments against a defense that gives up targets to the tight end. I think that Devin Funchess is interesting. I think that we're probably looking at 9, 10, 11 targets for Christian McCaffrey, though. So not quite the, what did he get last week? 16. But if we can get 9, 10, 11 targets, that's still a great look for him. And we're looking at what, 7, 8, 9 catches. So I like McCaffrey quite a bit. I still have concerns about his goal line role. You like McCaffrey more than Melvin Gordon, I'm assuming?
Every week there's a third straight week where like they're priced near each other, and I can't decide. I do think that it makes sense for the Rams to use Melvin Gordon in the pass game this week, considering Aqib Talib, considering Marcus Peters on the outside. It would make a lot of sense to continue to throw the football to Melvin Gordon, which they've done a ton already. It concerns me somewhat that Austin Eckler has played so well and has cut into Melvin Gordon's usage a little bit. But I don't know, man. I think Rams haven't played anybody yet, but you can make a case that the Rams do and will have one of the best overall defenses in the league, right? So I don't know. That one scares me a little bit, I guess. But Melvin Gordon is certainly not a bad play. Let's move up to the top. Todd Gurley continues to have this outrageous red zone role. I mean, dude's just a touchdown machine, plays in the pass game, obviously. Sean McVay is probably the best play caller going right now. But we also have Alvin Kamara in this matchup, as we mentioned, against the Falcons. Do you have a strong preference between Gurley and Alvin Kamara this week? There is a $300 difference.
Yeah, this is what's so weird about this week. I think that Gordon and McCaffrey are close. I'm kind of leaning McCaffrey right now just because of the things you mentioned about the Rams defense. And we rostered Gordon for his touchdowns. And if it's going to be tougher to score this week or tougher to move the ball down to scoring position, that hurts him a little bit. And then we've got Gurley and Kamara, same thing. Both are in a great spot. Gurley has 15 carries. I think it's inside the 20, might be inside the 10. 15 carries inside the 20. No one else in the league has more than 7. So like you said, his scoring position – usage, his role in that offense is insane. I think I'm leaning Kamara just because of how sweet that matchup is against Atlanta. I am less down on the Chargers defense than you are. I mean, it's still a team that only gave up 17 points a game last year. So you know, it's not a guarantee to me that the Rams just come in and smash in the spot. Like Joey Bosa and Legit, those are losses, but I just can't imagine that. These are really good cornerbacks, right? So I still think it's going to be difficult to move up and down the field. Whereas Kamara, yeah, like the floor is just so high with that pass game involvement. I don't think you can go wrong with either. I mean, I think that each of them, a failed game is going to be 18 to 20 points. It's crazy how many people were upset with Antonio Brown's 15 points last week, only because how difficult it is to get 15 points, you know? So obviously if these guys get 18 points, you're going to be bummed. It's not great for the price you paid, but still the floor is high in terms of just pure points. I think I'm slightly Kamara over Gurley, but man, it's close for me. Do you have a preference there?
Yeah, my lean is Kamara just because I don't want to pass on this matchup against the Falcons again. And I do think the Saints will play well here. They've played poorly against two inferior opponents, the Bucs and the Browns. And people will say maybe the Saints are just bad. Maybe it's just them. I don't think that's the case. And I think they turn around this week and play well. So I would lean Kamara. He did have a touchdown called back last week, a goal line touchdown called back by penalty last week. So he continues to get goal line work in his pass game role. Is just so outrageous. Let me ask you this from a roster construction standpoint. I like Gurley and Kamara more than I like the top of the wide receiver range. However, if we pass on Gurley and Kamara because of all these running back values that are strong, we end up getting pushed up at wide receiver. And we miss out on Gurley and Kamara. So how do we handle that from a roster construction standpoint? Can we pass on some of these running back values to jam in Gurley or Kamara? And honestly, I think you can fit both. It's actually, I think, possible to fit both Gurley and Kamara in some lineups.
Yeah, I think that it's fine to, like in tournaments, it's similar to the tight end thing we talked about last week. Like on paper, it made the most sense to pay down at tight end. But if those tight ends disappoint, as they did last week, and you go Kelce, who got 32 points at 5% ownership, you're in great shape. I mean, I think some of these guys do have good matchups or good spots or good usage or whatever. Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, these are all, like, you could fit two of these guys and go cheap at running back. But there's also a lot of good cheap wide receivers that we'll get to, Devin Funchess and Allen Robinson and Tyler Boyd and all these guys who can save you money, and then you could just go up at running back. So I think that there's a lot of different ways this slate can play out. I think if you are going game theory in tournaments, it makes sense to just look at what ownership projection is coming in at and go with a different approach, because there's a lot of either ors across positions. Like, I don't think that things are as straightforward this week as they were other weeks. It's a weird week in that my player pool is a lot smaller by Friday night than it usually is, but my ability to narrow down from that pool is not there right now, because a lot of these plays are just like complete toss-ups, like McCaffrey and Gordon or Gurley and Kamara. Or even the whole Watson-Mahomes conversation we had earlier, where it's just like so many different things could happen where different types of roster construction could end up being the best this week. And there's not a lot of like super clear value. So you could even just go mid-tier across the board. I think there's a lot of different ways you can play this week.
Off the board at running back, I think a lot of people are going to be scared off by Leonard Fournette's hamstring injury and him missing a week and him being on the injury report. I do expect him to be perfectly fine. They listed a bunch of guys questionable that are obviously going to play. Leonard Fournette's only 6,900. Certainly wouldn't use him in cash coming off of a hamstring injury and a reasonably tough matchup. I think he's worth mentioning. Kenyon Drake home against the Raiders. We know Frank Gore is going to get about 30% of the running back work, but Kenyon Drake's price reflects that, I think, at 5,600. And David Johnson, to me, like, the inept coaching is scary and the matchup isn't great, but I do think the Cardinals play well here and the coaches seem to be aware that using David Johnson split wide, using him in the slot, using him creatively, they seem, from what they've said this week, they seem to be aware that's what they must do. So David Johnson at 7,200 stands out to me as well if I was playing a bunch of tournament lineups. Any thoughts on those and anything off the board at running back?
Yeah, I think those guys are all interesting for the reasons you said, and you basically categorize them the same way I would. Like, they're not in the same group as these guys we talked about. I do have, you brought up the matchup concerns against the Jaguars. I think it's interesting that the Titans last week, a lot of times on first down, they were playing nickel when the Texans were in two tight end sets. So the Texans were telegraphing running plays Titans were still playing nickel, but I think that given the Belichick roots in this coaching staff, I'm taking that as a very game plan specific thing, which means that I expect them to actually load up to stop the run this week. And this is a defense that finished, what, second or third last year in yards allowed per carry. So they have the personnel to stop the run. I'm going to throw in Saquon Barkley as a guy nobody's going to look at between price between Melvin Gordon and Christian McCaffrey. That offensive line, but that pass game role is sweet. Tons of upside. And Matt Breida, like, he's the better back than Alf. I expect another 50-50 split. But let's say he gets 65% of the touches this week. You know, we're talking about these 65% guys that we're paying up for, like, or 70, 75% guys are paying up for. I think that Breida is interesting in tournaments just because, you know, this is a spot where he would project to get more work with the 49ers trailing, and he's the better back on this team.
All right, let's move to the wide receiver position where I don't see, like, ownership getting sucked up by one guy or two guys here all that much. I don't think there's a clear-cut slam dunk value play at the position. I don't think there's a clear-cut slam dunk at the top of the position. So I think it'll be pretty flat at wide receiver in terms of ownership. So let's just start at the bottom and go up. I think the cheapest guy I'd be willing to play is Tyler Boyd, who has run a route on every single one of Andy Dalton's dropbacks this season. Tyler Boyd will play out wide in two wide sets, kick inside in three wide sets. The matchup is fair, I think, against the Panthers, but DraftKings kind of fell asleep in terms of moving his price. I'm like, I mean, they've been really aggressive moving a lot of guys' prices this year. They did not move Tyler Boyd's price. He's still 3,700. I think he's the cheapest I would go. Would you go to anybody cheaper, and what do you think about Boyd?
Yeah, doesn't Boyd just seem like the kind of guy who's such a perfect play and is going to be 3% owned or 5% owned because people just won't play him, and then he's going to post a dud? That's kind of what it feels like. I agree with you, man. He has 35% of the team's air yards this season. Basically, this offense is A.J. Green, like through the air, it's A.J. Green. And Tyler Boyd, they should lean a little bit more pass heavy this week. I guess my biggest concerns in this spot across the board for the Bengals is just that, like, they don't run a lot of plays and the Panthers don't allow a lot of plays. So we can end up with one of these awful, like, 50 play games that the Bengals have. And then from a volume perspective, we're just hurting on all these guys. So I like Boyd. He's on my list and he's the cheapest I would go on the main team. But he's not a dude that I feel comfortable with right now. I'd love to get up to these like 4,800 to 5K guys because I think there's a lot to like in that range. So I like Boyd. Every time I put him on a roster, it feels disgusting, even with what it enables me to do at other spots. I mean, you feel the same way?
Yeah. And I should note Billy Price, who I think has stabilized their offensive line. I mean, the offensive line was such a problem for the Bengals last year. Billy Price will be out with a foot injury, their first round center. So that's a concern for me too. Going on the road, Carolina is not going to be easy. So, and yeah, I mean, the Bengals are just play slow. I certainly wouldn't want to play like Geo and Boyd in a lineup. That sounds like you're really asking for trouble. Moving up, I think in the 4K range, the most popular guy will be Cooper Kupp. He has sunk below 5K to 4,900. Cooper Kupp, such a massive, massive red zone role for the Rams. And then Geronimo Allison has gained earned the trust of Aaron Rodgers and is playing a ton. I mean, Geronimo Allison, in terms of routes run, is not that far behind Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams. Talk to me about Allison and Kupp and anyone else in the 4K range.
Yeah, those are the guys, I guess, below 5K besides John Brown, who I would be considering. Kupp, you basically need a touchdown, right? I mean, he's going to get you – you know, he's going to get you something like 6 for 70. Then if he scores, he's pushing 20 points. If he doesn't, he gets you 11, 12, 13. So I think he's totally fine. I think that at that price, that's totally worth taking. You don't need a 30-point game at that price. So if he scores and gets you 20, you're feeling pretty good. Who was the other one you mentioned besides?
Geronimo Allison.
Oh, Geronimo Allison. Yeah, so the matchup concerns me a little bit against Washington, but that's it. I mean, I had Allison on some tournament teams last week against Minnesota. I like this guy. I think he's going to get 6 to 8 targets every game right now. And obviously, he's much more – like, his targets are way more valuable than Randall Cobb's targets. In fact, I believe Allison's average depth of target is 11 yards and Devontae Adams is like 10.3. So he's almost in that Devontae Adams range when you take his targets and his ADOT. Obviously, red zone work isn't going to be there quite the way it will be for Adams, but I like him. And John Brown, again, I mean, I just think that the Denver pass defense isn't that good, and they've been really bad over the middle, especially the deep middle of the field, and that spot where John Brown's going to get some work. This Ravens team has a Vegas implied total of, what, like 24.5? And they're not going to get those points on the ground. Alex Collins has been ineffective. Denver stops the run. And we're going to see another game with 40, 50% Buck Allen on the field and a lot of passing from the Ravens. So with Willie Snead being covered by Chris Harris and Michael Crabtree, you know, just out there as a possession guy, I think that Brown makes sense. And then at 5K, right at 5K is Funchess, your boy. You have any thoughts on Funchess this week?
It's far from my boy. I haven't played him yet. I wasn't planning on playing him this week because there's a guy at 5,100 I think I like more. But yeah, I just think Funchess is overrated as a player, and even in really, really good spots has failed. So I don't know. I prefer Robert Woods, who leads the Rams in targets, who came up about a foot short of having a huge game last week. Jared Goff just missed him wide open. I know you have matchup concerns for Robert Woods. I guess I'm more worried about this Chargers defense than you are, but you certainly prefer Funchess to Woods, it sounds like.
No, I've been interested to pick your brains on Woods because you're better than I am at targeting guys in bad matchups or matchups that are perceived to be bad. And I'm such a matchups guy that it's harder for me to pull the trigger. I highlighted Woods this week for, I'm sure, the same reasons you're on him. I mean, he's got like 45% mm-hmm. of the team's air yards. I mean, this dude had 9 targets in each game. You know, more targets than Brandon Cooks, more air yards than Brandon Cooks. This dude's good. They're going to throw to him deep. And like you've been bringing up, if this Chargers pass rush can't get to Jared Goff, right, then he's going to have opportunity to unleash some deep balls, some passes 15, 20 yards downfield, which is right where we want Robert Woods to be. So, yeah, I mean, I just have concerns about this Chargers secondary. It's primarily zone defense, so it will be possible for them to scheme these guys into holes in the zone. It's actually a pretty similar defense to what Goff faced in the Cardinals last week, although obviously more talented on the back end, and Goff made some good tight window throws. So I would love to play Woods. It feels scary in cash games. I mean, I guess that's coming. I played him at 2% owned in cash games last year, 1 week. Like, so I don't know why it feels so scary, but Woods just feels wrong given the matchup. Can you talk me on to him over these other guys?
No, it's just confidence in this, in Sean McVay and the Rams offense scoring points and getting to their, what's been their number one wideout, you know, for 5,100. I mean, imagine I told you had one of the best, if not the best or a top five offense in the league, and their number one wideout is 5,100. So yeah, it would just be that. I have no problem going down to Cup. I mean, you mentioned Cup, you know, he's going to get you 6 for 60. That's pretty good for 4,900 if you have that as a floor, you know, so. I think that's interesting, but let's keep going up the pricing here. You mentioned Allen Robinson at the top. Obviously, Allen Robinson played on Monday night when he saw those 14 targets. Price did not adjust. We have seen Allen Robinson work in the slot. Some have confidence in Matt Nagy. They are on a short week. They are going on the road to Arizona, who I think will play well, but Allen Robinson is just 5,400. Sounds like you prefer him to a lot of these guys that we already talked about.
Yeah, I have question marks about him as well, just because of this offense, how bad it's been. But I like him from just a, like, we saw Robert Woods last year have these low target games in the midst of, you know, he'd be like 9 target, 8 target, 12 target, 4 or 5 targets. So I guess that's the other thing that scares me on Woods. But yeah, Allen Robinson, man, he's got 7 targets and 14 targets, second in the NFL in percentage share of team air yards. And this Cardinals defense is super aggressive against the run. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of plays where they can run a play action and suck in these linebackers. And there's just going to be this open space for Allen Robinson, 8, 10, 12 yards downfield. So I think that he's going to be able to pick up, you know, 3 or 4 easy catches for what, that's like 40 yards right there. And then Obviously has a lot of upside on top of that. So it does go Robinson first for me. Maybe it's going to go Robinson and then Woods and then some of these other guys. But yeah, I like Allen Robinson quite a bit. And I think that even if Marquise Goodwin plays, I like Robinson more than Goodwin. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, Goodwin is scary coming off of what seems to be a pretty severe injury. It sounds like he's an actual game-time decision with that deep quad bruise. So, yeah, I would think Allen Robinson is safer there. Goodwin would be part of, I guess, game stacks for me, which I'm sure will be the most popular game stack, will be that Kansas City-San Francisco game. But in the higher range of the 5Ks comes one of my favorite plays in Will Fuller, who it's just like should be a layup. Janoris Jenkins on DeAndre Hopkins, and then Eli Apple's out, and B.W. Webb is on his fifth team in 6 years and was out of the NFL last year. I mean, Will Fuller is going to get his chances deep, and against this Giants secondary, they should be successful deep targets. So Will Fuller at 5,900 kind of sticks out. I don't have the balls to play Will Fuller in cash just because he's not the kind of receiver you play in cash with his, you know, massive ADOT. But I still think he's a really good play. And then right next to him is the guy that most people are considering the safer cash play, is Nelson Agholor, which we should talk about because I kind of agree with you on the Jordan Matthews thing, maybe not to the extent that you do, but talk to me about Will Fuller and a little bit about Agholor.
Yeah, I mean, I might have the balls to play Fuller in cash this week. I'm definitely toying around with it. You know, it's the same thing as the Woods thing. Like, what if those targets disappear? What if he has another 5-6 target game? He only averaged 5.5 targets with Deshaun Watson last year in spite of his incredible production. But it doesn't seem like they want to throw to the tight ends when both, you know, Hopkins and Fuller are out there. And I don't blame them. They don't want to throw to the slot receivers. Lamar Miller's not a huge threat. So if you get 32 pass attempts from Watson, we're probably still looking at another 20 combined for Hopkins and Fuller. And with Janoris Jenkins primarily on Hopkins, yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense. I think that we get at least 7 targets for Fuller. They had him on some slant routes last week. They've kind of expanded his route tree a little bit this year. So I would feel good about it. Agholor would have been locked in for me if not for the Jordan Matthews news. The concern, and this is obviously not definitive, it's just speculating some stuff, but the concern is he played really poorly on the outside a couple of years ago. Obviously, there were also stories last summer about him kind of recommitting himself and working a lot harder last offseason. So it's not guaranteed that his spike in production came just because of the switch to the slot. They coincided, so it's really tough to separate one from the other. But, I mean, this dude was considered a bust early on when he was just playing on the outside. And we know that Wentz likes targeting the slot. So it scares me a little bit. I think that Agholor's ceiling is awesome, and I could totally see him getting 10 to 12 targets. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he got 6, 7, 8 targets this week. Like, what would you peg as a reasonable range for Agholor?
Well, I think the better question is how much do we actually think Jordan Matthews can play, right? Like, and I get he was with the team last year in training camp, but he did just sign 5 days ago. Like, I'm not projecting Jordan Matthews to take a huge target share. Maybe that turns out to be wrong. But when they pick him up off the street, it seems unlikely to me that he'd be featured so much. So yeah, I think Jordan Matthews will play some, but I still think Nelson Agholor will see plenty of slot work. So yeah, I think Nelson Agholor will get his 8-9 targets. That would be, I'd feel pretty good about that considering the state of the Eagles injury situation. Not only no Alshon Jeffery, no Mike Wallace, no Mac Hollins, but also no Darren Sproles. So you're taking out a lot of pass catching weapons there. And then you add back in Carson Wentz at the same time, which is a pretty clear upgrade on Nick Foles. So yeah, I like Agholor. I think that 6,100 is very fair. It's certainly not a slam dunk, but I think it's fair for the way he's played and the way he's been used. So yeah, I'm okay with it. You almost have me, I'm now in the back of my head now is you have me thinking maybe I should play Will Fuller in cash, just totally YOLO, just now you have it in the back of my head now.
This is like the Tevin Coleman thing. You're not playing Will Fuller in cash. I can clear that up for you now. We can move forward. All right. But get Fuller on some tournament teams. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Agholor is appropriately priced. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Speaking of that 6K range, though, if you only go up 600 from Agholor, you get to T.Y. Hilton, who's seen 10 targets in 2 straight games. I think the only prayer the Colts have of moving the ball against the Eagles is via the pass. And Frank Reich, who is obviously now coaching the Colts, should know better than anybody how to attack this Eagles defense. He went against them every day in practice. Do you have an interest in T.Y. Hilton at 6,700?
Not major interest. I think he's a totally fine play, but he's seen four targets more than, I think it was more than 10 yards downfield, but maybe it's more than 15 yards downfield. Only four targets so far, more than 15 yards downfield, 0-for-4 on those. So, yeah, I mean, I think that 10, 11, 12 targets, like you said, it's the only way to move the ball here. Teams check out of run plays so often against the Eagles. They face the fewest rush attempts in the NFL last year. They're on, you know, in that same trend this year. So I think that with T.Y. Hilton, we're probably looking at 10, 11, 12 targets, but mostly, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage. So yeah, I guess like 8-for-80 is probably his floor, which is great for maybe 7-for-70 would be his floor, which is great for 6,700. And then you add in his ceiling. I'm fine with that. He's not a guy that I've been really drawn toward, primarily because I think a lot of these 5K guys have similar projections. And then if I can get them and get up to somebody like DeAndre Hopkins, I feel a little bit better about things. Maybe I'm underselling T.Y. Hilton in this spot. But I mean, what are the Colts going to score? Two touchdowns? I guess that's the other concern for me. What are the chances of a blow-up game here?
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move up to some of the big names that start to pop up in the 7K range. We're talking about Keenan Allen, who has a better matchup than the guys on the outside do, certainly. We're talking about A.J. Green at 7,500. We're talking about Julio Jones, who has dipped below 8K, which is a little bit eye-opening. And then we also have Davante Adams, who I think would be more off the board at 7,600. But I think this 7K range will go somewhat overlooked. Not Julio, but the other guys will go somewhat overlooked just because we have Odell, DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, Michael Thomas in the 8K range.
Yeah, Roby Coleman has no chance of slowing down Keenan Allen inside. Keenan Allen lines up in the slot over 50% of the time, and he has at least 6 inches and 30 pounds on Roby Coleman. So I think that's a mismatch. We both have concerns about the Chargers' ability to put up, you know, post touchdowns this week. So I think that like floor is just super high on Keenan Allen. Ceiling will be a little tougher for him to hit. A.J. Green, I'm not typically in the habit of paying up for 7 or 8 targets. So I think he's a fine play. I think the matchup is good. I usually miss out on his big games just because I'm a volume guy. And then speaking of volume, yeah, Julio Jones, man, like they're still going to attack with him. He has 71% of the Falcons' air yards. He had a couple decent games last year in this matchup. I think he had 11 targets in each and a 5-for-98 and then a 7-for-140 something. So he can beat Lattimore. I think that we see his floor obviously is going to be around that 5-for-90 range. You know, he could have sub 50% catch rate, but if he hauls in a couple extra passes, then he can smash in this spot.
Yeah. I mean, Marshawn Lattimore is a good player. I don't think he's a big hindrance to Julio Jones' ceiling, but we'll see. It's certainly not a perfect matchup when you're getting trailed by somebody who I think is good in Marshawn Lattimore. In the 8K range, we do have DeAndre Hopkins, who will be up against Janoris Jenkins. Obviously, DeAndre Hopkins is a favorite in that matchup, but then we have the guy who I expect to be extremely highly owned, the guy who sees 8 targets or 6 targets and scores 40 DK points every week in Tyreek Hill. I presume you're not paying up for Tyreek Hill. He's far cheaper on FanDuel. I do think that the chemistry between Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill is real. Like, he's been targeted 28 times by Patrick Mahomes preseason and regular season. Tyreek Hill has caught 26 of those for 441 yards. And that's like, these guys have something special going on. There's no doubt about that. I can't stomach 8,500 for Tyreek Hill, even in this awesome matchup outside of game stacks, outside of stacks with Mahomes. How do you feel about this 8K range?
Yeah, I'm with you on Tyreek Hill for the same reasons. I think he's a fine, not a fine play. I think he's a great play. Just his range is a little bit broader than I want at 8,500. If I'm paying over 8K for a player, I want to feel pretty comfortable that they're going to get me at least 20. And obviously, like, this high efficiency is just tougher for me to bet on. It's one of those things where the more you know, the more difficult it is to pull the trigger, and you end up missing out on some of these monster games. So Tyreek Hill has nothing to do with the play. It's just the way that I play DFS. He's not a guy I'm going to pay $8,500 for 6 to 8 targets. I think that we kind of gloss over the opportunity for a guy in Odell Beckham who put up, what was it, 11 catches for over 100 yards against the Jaguars, and then got shut down by a Cowboys team that plays this zone defense that's routinely given him problems. Like, ever since that monster start against the Cowboys, his career, he struggled against them. So I think he's really interesting. I think he's going to go overlooked. I think another guy under 8K that is going to go overlooked is Adam Thielen. We talk about, obviously, a smash spot for the Vikings, but if they put up 4 or 5 touchdowns, it's not like they're taking the foot off the gas before the, you know, early in the fourth quarter. So I think that Thielen still gets his 9 to 12 targets in a tremendous matchup. Last week, the Chargers were able to get Keenan Allen matched up on Tremaine Edmonds 4 different times. And Keenan Allen caught 4 for 43 or something in that matchup. Like, Adam Thielen against a linebacker is just so easy. Tremaine Edmonds is already bad, and then you get somebody like Adam Thielen on him. So I think that Thielen is actually a really interesting high upside, high floor play that people are going to overlook at that high end of the price range.
Mm-hmm. We didn't get your DeAndre Hopkins take. How do you compare him to Odell and Tyreek Hill?
I think it's Hopkins first for me in that range, and then Odell, and then it'd be Tyreek Hill. How are you seeing those guys?
I don't know. It pains me to say it, but I actually think Tyreek Hill is the best play.
Isn't it weird, man, how, like, in the tiers this week, there's so many close calls like that?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you could make the argument that Tyreek Hill's volume has been lower because all they do is score 80-yard touchdowns, right? You don't have a lot of volume when you just score 80-yard touchdowns on every play, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but when we talk about being able to bank on points, don't you want a guy who gets, like, actual red zone work? I guess he's getting these shovel passes that count as receptions on, you know, on jet sweeps that are actual passes.
Of course. Look, let's be honest. I'm not playing Tyreek Hill. If I could play anybody in this range, it would be Julio Jones, I think. And the last guy we need to mention at wide receiver is Michael Thomas. He's significantly more priced, 1K more for Michael Thomas than Julio Jones. Does not feel right. Michael Thomas has caught, like, the nut game script back-to-back weeks with the Saints falling behind to Tampa and to Cleveland. Can we pay $8,900 for Michael Thomas? Dude's a baller, and Breeze obviously loves him. Can we pay $8,900?
I think we lock in points. I don't think that – here's what's hard for me. I don't think that Thomas and Kamara in this spot, for a variety of reasons, I don't think they can both score 30 points. So if that happens and you get 20 from one and 30 from the other and you're kind of guessing between the two, that makes it difficult for me. Thomas is one of these, like, super high floor guys. It feels dirty to pay $8,900 for a wide receiver who's not Antonio Brown. I don't think I can go there on a main team, but I will definitely have some Thomas. Do you have any thoughts on Calvin Ridley from just a, if we look at this game and say, realistically, Julio can't keep getting 70% of the air yards, and if Lattimore's on him and does a good job, we get targets over to Calvin Ridley for $3,700?
Yeah, I wasn't high on Calvin Ridley coming in to the NFL, and I think the Falcons have been somewhat disappointed with him to the point where he hasn't been able to overtake Mohamed Sanu. And I know Calvin Ridley scored a touchdown last week. It would feel a little bit chasey to me to play Calvin Ridley here, but it certainly makes sense from the perspective that you said. And yeah, for guys under 4K, there aren't a lot of them this week, so I guess he would be in play, a consideration, but I'm not sure you need to go there this week.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just an interesting tournament thought.
Anything else off the board at wide receiver before we move on? Tyler Lockett for you?
Man, I hate that Seahawks offense right now.
Sammy Watkins for you?
Watkins in tournaments. I mean, if you load him up in just a stack and take the points. That's the thing about the Chiefs. It's so hard to predict where all these receptions and points are coming from. So in tournaments, sure, take Watkins.
Okay, let's move to the tight end position where, as of today, surprise news that Jack Doyle is going to miss this game due to a hip injury that he was able to play through last week. Can we safely project a role change for Eric Ebron. And I think that we can, but I think people are just like slam dunking it without really thinking about it. Eric Ebron has played a completely different position than Jack Doyle. Eric Ebron has played the F for the move tight end spot. Jack Doyle has been split off the line some, but mostly in line. I do think that Eric Ebron will see a bump in snaps, a bump in routes to run, but I don't think it's going to be like 100%. They'll probably get Eric Swoop in there. They have a couple other tight ends on the roster, Ryan Hewitt. But at 3,400, it's just hard to pass on Eric Ebron on this slate where we want to pay up at some other positions. So how much of a slam dunk is Eric Ebron for you?
Didn't he have like 16 snaps last week?
Yeah.
You make good points. I think we still get him up to 35 or 40 snaps just because they're going to need to throw the ball. And Marlon Mack is out, which I think has an underrated impact on the way that the Colts will play offense. You already can't run against the Eagles. So I think that just this is going to be such a pass-heavy game for the Colts that it would be difficult for Ebron to fall shy of six or seven targets. At 3,400, I'm fine taking that. But I think that unless the play volume is just super low for the Colts, we have to be looking at least 38 to 40 pass attempts for Luck. And with that, I mean, who does he have to throw to? Chester Rogers and Ryan Grant. And even if Swoop is in there for blocking purposes, like he's not going to get eight or nine targets. So, yeah, I think it's fine to put Ebron in like six to seven target range with upside for nine or 10.
Yeah, and I do think Ebron, based on roster construction and other factors, will end up close to 40% owned. I mean, George Kittle last week was 35% owned, I believe. My favorite pivot, speaking of George Kittle, my favorite pivot off Eric Ebron would be George Kittle, who's completely dudded last week at massive ownership. That will cripple his ownership this week, combined with the Ebron news. Will cripple his ownership, but George Kittle's usage continues to be massive, running a route on almost all of Jimmy Garoppolo's dropbacks. Now we get this Eric Berry-less Chiefs defense, which, as I mentioned, is a candidate to allow the most yards per play in the league again this year, or be in the bottom five again this year. So George Kittle, to me, is an awesome pivot. His price went up $4,500 to $4,500 despite that dud. I think George Kittle is an awesome pivot. Jared Cook would be another pivot I could consider just from a matchup perspective. Miami struggles so bad against tight ends. Those would be my primary pivots off of Ebron. What do you think of them, and do you have any other pivots?
Yeah, those are the main guys. I think the Dolphins are going to be better against the tight end this year than they were last year. I'm expecting them to finish kind of middle of the pack, but they're really good against wide receivers. So it makes sense for Cook to be involved again. Kittle, it just feels scary after four targets. It's these uncertain target guys. I think Kittle has the most upside. Like Kittle has legit 25 to 30 point upside, especially in this spot. If ownership's going to be low, especially, makes a lot of sense in tournaments. For just 1,100 more, there's a roster construction. That's just an example, but like Deshaun Watson, Will Fuller, and Kittle cost the same as Mahomes, Aguilar, and Ebron. And so you just get like guys who are way lower owned with potentially the same upside or maybe even more upside across the board with that group of players. So I think that there's some interesting cases to be made for playing Kittle, especially in tournaments. The last guy I would throw in down there is Ian Thomas, just because he did run a pass route on almost every one of Cam's dropbacks last week. And Devondre Campbell is legit one of the best coverage linebackers when it comes to tight ends. So I think that there's a chance that Ian Thomas actually surprises with six, seven, eight targets this week. Obviously, I wouldn't feel safe with that in cash games or high-dollar tournaments, But I think that Thomas is definitely interesting at only 2,800.
I said this last week. I said, do we have any interest in paying up at tight end? We know a lot of people are going to be paying down, and we acknowledge that we won't be doing it, but it's probably sharp in tournaments. And as you mentioned, it turned out that the Kelce teams were the smash teams last week. I think more people get to Kelce this week because of the spot they know Patrick Mahomes is in, because they saw Kelce go absolutely ham last week. Do you have interest in getting to Kelce or Zach Ertz? Rob Gronkowski is not on the main slate.
I prefer Ertz over Kelce just because of the certainty with the targets. Like we've seen Kelce put up whatever it was, a two-point game. Obviously, that's an outlier, but it would not surprise me if Kelce puts up 30. It wouldn't surprise me if he puts up 10. Whereas I think Ertz is more like 20 to 30 as his range. Carson Wentz back, and no Alshon Jeffrey, no Jay Ajayi. So, yeah, if Ertz were like 5,900 or 6,100, I think he was 61 last week. If he were 6,100, it would be a lot easier for me to play him than it is at 68 or whatever he is this week. But I like Ertz a lot, and I like Kelsey a lot. I would go Ertz over Kelsey. I've toyed around with rosters with Ertz. It just, then you look at what you can fit in when you go down to Ebron or down to Kittle even, and it's just tough to do it. But I like Ertz quite a bit this week.
Anything else off the board at tight end?
Jordan Reed, I mean, who's probably never off the board. But, yeah, I think Jordan Reed's a good play this week. Obviously, he's in the same range of expectations.
Yeah, people are probably going to want to play Jimmy Graham. People might try to play Trey Burton or Austin Hooper. I don't think I'm going to play any of those guys. Any interest there?
I wish I could have interest in Trey Burton. But, yeah, that offense is kind of a mess right now, and I don't want to touch anybody outside of Allen Robinson at the moment.
All right, let's move to defense, where obviously the Vikings are in the best possible spot. They're at home. They have one of the league's best defenses. Buffalo is league worst in virtually every position, in every category. However, the Vikings are 4,300. Is there a scenario where you can pay 4,300 for a defense when there's actually some cheap defenses that I like this week?
Man, on this slate, it's going to be hard for me to do it. Because the cheap defenses I like them quite a bit, and they're really cheap. So you're talking about 2K in savings for defense, where like guaranteed points on a roster are so valuable. And I think the Vikings are guaranteed points, but 2K can buy you a lot of upside and a lot of opportunity in other spots. The Vikings are clearly the best play, but when you take everything into account with where their price compared to some of these other defenses, I will have a hard time pulling the trigger. I will be surprised if the Vikings fail. They're going to have a good game, but I might try to go quite a bit cheaper than that.
I suspect we're thinking of the same defense, but maybe we're not. I am thinking of the Dallas Cowboys, who are 2,200, have shown a pass rush. We know how bad the Seahawks offense is. Left guard Ethan Pochick will miss this game as well for the Seahawks. Russell Wilson has a tendency to run into sacks. It's not the greatest play in the world, I don't think, but at 2,200, as you mentioned, 2K savings, 2,100 savings off the Vikings, it makes a lot of sense. And then there's other ones down below 2,500 that I like too, but that one would be my favorite, I think.
Yeah, that's the one. The only thing that makes it scary for me is that it's on the road, and the Seahawks played quite a bit better at home. The thing with Russ right now is not only can his offensive line not block, but his receivers can't get open. Like, he has Will Disley and Tyler Lockett and Brandon Marshall that he's throwing to. So he's having to choose between taking a sack or throwing it deep to guys who are covered. And that's resulted in 3 interceptions, 12 sacks taken, most sacks taken in the league. The Cowboys have the top 3 or top 5 pass rush, or at least they do so far. They get Randy Gregory back this week. Yeah, there's a lot to like about that spot. And by far, yeah. And so when I have a roster that has the Cowboys on it, and then I try to take that same roster and see what I would have to change to get up to the Vikings, it gets so ugly, the sacrifice I have to make in some other positions. Right now I'm leaning Cowboys. Cardinals are another cheap one that I think is – interesting at home, zone defense, and Trubisky. I mean, Trubisky can't throw passes on target. So a zone defense with an inaccurate quarterback, you're just asking for interceptions. There were some real tight window throws that Goff had to make last week against this Cardinals defense, and Trubisky won't be capable of making those. It's scary when you see the Cardinals have, what, I think 8 total defense special teams points to start the year through 2 games, but it's a good spot as well. I think they're 2,400. Anybody else down there that you like?
Yeah, Cardinals would be my favorite there. I had the Broncos on my list just as a strong pass rush at 2,400, but I certainly would prefer the Cowboys and the Cardinals. There's other ones in the mid-range that I'm okay with. Houston getting Jadeveon Clowney back at 2,800. I mean, this mismatch that we're going to see with the Texans defensive line versus the Giants offensive line is so, so, so massive. Baltimore at 2,800. And then you can play the Eagles at 3K. I think Jacksonville at 4K will go overlooked in tournaments as well. Even Miami, I'm not against against Derek Carr. But yeah, I think there's a lot to chew on, and maybe people are going to either go up or go down and not play that much in the mid-range. So yeah, I don't know. Anything in the mid-range you really like?
Yeah, pricing psychology is always so interesting on these slates where there's really cheap options that people like and really expensive options that people like, because like you said, guys, it's, you know, options in the mid-range just go overlooked. You named all the ones for me except for the Bears is another one that's interesting this week against Sam Bradford, and probably by the third or fourth quarter, Josh Rosen, because I can't imagine that Bradford lasts another game at this point. Bears are a little more expensive than I want to pay, especially with the Vikings and Jags right there, but I think that they are viable. And yeah, I want to emphasize the Dolphins one. I do think that this is a really good defense, and I do think that Derek Carr is pretty bad. I actually like some of the stuff that the Raiders are doing on offense. They're just not being able to execute it. So I think that the Dolphins are interesting if you're looking for just a completely overlooked defense in tournaments.
All right, it's time to get to the stacks. The people, they haven't been watching. They've been chatting. Who knows what they've been doing? But now their ears perk up. They want to hear the best stack. They want to hear the answer to the test. Give them your favorite chalk stack and then a contrarian stack for them to lose money on.
The chalk stack, I'm going to let you take the obvious one. I'm going to go Deshaun Watson to Fuller and Hopkins. I think that we're probably looking at about 65 to 70 points from those three combined. And obviously they can fall a little shy of that, but if they fall shy, we're probably looking at 55 points. And if they go off, you could be looking at 85 or 90. I think there's a chance for that three-man group to really go off this week, a good way to go away from the main chalk stack.
Chalk stack is obvious. It's going to be Patrick Mahomes with some combo of Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and Sammy Watkins. I think that if I was going to play that stack, I would bring it back with George Kittle. And I fear that's starting to get a little bit popular too. And considering we're giving this away for free on YouTube, maybe it'll end up being even more popular. But yeah, I think that's the pretty obvious chalk stack, and with good reason. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is no fluke. We've been talking about him for ever since, like, I saw him in the 2017 preseason when he was the president of team preseason in 2017. It was just like, holy cow, this guy is something else. So yeah, that's the chalk one. Give a contrarian one for the people.
So for contrarian, I'm going to go Joe Flacco to John Brown. It's going to cost you 10.2K. Flacco has back-to-back 20-point games. John Brown is by far the leader in this pass-catching core, and I don't think that the Broncos' pass defense is nearly as good as it's been the last few years. So I think there's a chance for that to hit for 35 to 45 points on a pretty cheap pairing that nobody else will have.
Yeah, I'll go with one that's also cheap and saves you a lot of money, and it's Jared Goff to Robert Woods. 5,900 for Goff and 5,100 for Woods in a game where I do think the Rams will score the football pretty well. We'll see if this Chargers defense can rally. For now, I don't have my fingers crossed. So I will go Goff to Woods, who's been, as we talked about earlier in the show, by most metrics except for box score production, the number one receiver on the Rams. All right, tell the people about, since we gave this away for free, I mean, we gave away the literal gold for free here. Tell them it's going to be behind the paywall next week. Tell them what they have to do to see it next week.
Yeah, so check out oneweekseason.com. There's a join now button up in the top right corner. Click on that. We have a week pass. It's $9. So if you think about it, if you buy it on Friday or Saturday, you kind of get 2 weeks, because you get all this week's information before kickoff, and you get next week's information when it comes out. That's one way to do it. Or, you know, $49 for 12 months is a much better deal than $9 for 7 days. A lot of cool stuff there. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee, so check it out. If you don't like it, ask for your money back. We'll take care of you.
Oh, God, really? That sounds like a nightmare. $49, you've raised the price $10. Now you're out of my lunch. Now, my lunch is usually somewhere, you know, in the 30 to 40 range. I usually don't go all the way to 50 for lunch.
Grubhub charging for delivery in Philadelphia.
All
This is $40 lunch. I paid $20 the other day to get Chipotle delivery. Move out to Portland, bro.
Chipotle, are you familiar with what's going on at Chipotle? They're killing people out there. All right.
I don't watch the news. I'm good. I'm alive.
Okay. We've gone long enough. Good luck to everybody in week three. For JM, for oneweekseason.com, for Jerry, I am Adam. We will see you for week four behind the paywall.